Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Broadcasting from the ESPN Tallahassee studios in Florida's capital city and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Scuttlebucks on 97.9 ESPN Radio. The Scuttlebucks with Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Tough one to do. Bucks fall to the Giants in ridiculous fashion. Head coach blows it, and you let one get away, in which you led 28-10 against a rookie quarterback. So it's a debacle, and on the horizon is the Rams on the road. This is the precursor to this brutal road stretch here where the Bucks are going to have a tough go of it. You wonder now, as we start the show today, did the Bucs season go up in flames on Sunday, blowing an 18-point lead against a rookie and a Giants defense that's not very good, who they were picking apart? It's just this one more than most. Lita Kemper will join us later in the show. But, Tom, I'm still beside myself at the time we record this show. It's a Wednesday. I can't let this one go. It took me a while. I had to turn off the television, went outside, played with my kids. When you get wrapped up playing with your kids or doing something like that, you can forget things for a while that trouble you. But it came back around that night as I lay in bed. It's still here now as we record the show. What a horrific loss for Tampa Bay. And Lord knows, we're lifelong Bucks fans. There have been some horrific losses. This one really, really hurts.
Yeah, I was talking to my sister last night about the game, and we used to go to all these games in the late 90s or early 2000s. My parents didn't want to go so much, but my sisters did, so they were the ones who took me when I was a kid.
Right.
And this loss reminds me of some of the worst losses in the NFC Central days. Yeah. It reminds me of playoff losses, just because we're so unused to, if that's a phrase, we're so not accustomed to being in any kind of contention whatsoever. I mean, even that 10-6 season with Freeman years ago, we got so lucky down the stretch of so many games, and you felt like, well, if you get in, it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
it's kind of a joke on the NFL,
type
but
thing,
we're going to get bounced right away. You started to feel like things were building in the right direction here, and this was a win you could put in your back pocket before you go on the brutal road stretch, and you're looking at what's happening in the NFC South, and you're saying, it's possible, and we look really competent at stopping the best players that each team has to offer when their offense comes to town or we travel to their building.
We just didn't know that Daniel Jones was the best player on the field someday.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Saquon Barkley, who is he?
We wrongfully made a concerted effort to shut down Saquon Barkley, that nobody. If we had known, then obviously we would have allowed him to run wild. Maybe he'd still be out there for the Giants this Sunday, and Daniel Jones would have been completely shut down.
There is a legitimate argument to make that Saquon Barkley stays healthy, we win the football game, because they would have never thought to turn the kid loose.
And also, he was turned. And also, they turned him loose after the down 28-10 because they're desperate at that point. He's got to throw. They're done. And I know with a Saquon Barkley, you could have an option to run, but I still think they would have had to throw, obviously, to get back in the game down 18. They start throwing. All of a sudden, they realized they had something. Kid got hot. He began to believe. Didn't matter how many times we hit him, how hard we hit him, how many times he was strip sacked. No, it didn't matter. Kid kept his eyes downfield. Credit where credit's due.
Yeah, he made some real good throws in the first half, too. You're like, ooh, they've got something to work. Like,
yeah.
Even if we just closed the game out, I would have told my Giants friends. I would be like,
you got a little something to work with
you
there.
You got something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it wasn't the cute story, the side story. It became like the NFL's number one story across the league. Monday morning, toast of the league is Daniel Jones.
The story to me, if we bring it back to the Bucks, and this is the Scuttle Bucks, is that you clearly do not trust your quarterback. And I've got a problem with this. because that quarterback threw for 380 yards and three touchdowns. Damn it, man. What are we doing? Secondly, Arians cannot come out and say dumbass things every time he makes this kind of colossal blunder. It made zero sense. He did walk it back on Monday, but come on, man. Let's buck up and get down, distance, time, red zone, all that. Understand those situations. It's 2 weeks in a row. You had the back-to-back timeout nonsense against Carolina, almost cost us the game. This game here, this is as bad as you'll see. And coaches screw this up a lot across college and pro football. I don't know if they don't have a guy in their ear, if they don't have somebody.
They don't.
Clearly they panic. But I think we believed as fans, as a fan base, that in getting the two-time coach of the year, you wouldn't have to look at this buffoonery at the end of games that we're seeing now. And then to have him insult your intelligence by saying, well, we wanted to back it up. No, you didn't. You panicked. We got to delay a game. You didn't know what you wanted to do there. You clearly decided you didn't trust your quarterback to throw a football into the end zone and take a shot in the last 13 seconds. So you took that penalty. And, you know, then you lied about it afterwards. And so, and lie is a strong word. It's not the same as, like, running arms to Iran and then telling people you didn't. I got it. But, I mean, come on. What are we doing here?
The Ayatollah needs some Uzis. What can I tell you?
I mean, I get that there are degrees of those kinds of fibs, but don't do that. Don't insult the reporters and the fans of this organization. Don't do that. Don't tell me that, oh, he's better from distance. Listen, man. No kicker in the league is. None. That's why we're seeing all these missed extra points, because they moved it back 5 freaking yards, and now guys are domed up and they can't hit an extra point. They never missed them when it was closer. That's why the league changed the rules, because they never missed them. So don't give me – plus physics. Stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it. Also, there are no wide hash marks in pro football. Yeah. This is not college. There is no crazy angled kick. Well, and you centered it.
Plus physics, I think, is nice, because yeah. You could probably lead with physics every single time wanted to, decided to go, listen, I've got an ironclad case, plus there's physics
plus
on my
I've
side.
Got physics here. Yeah.
Which are usually, you know, absolute, especially when we're talking about your margin for error, as if you were 7 yards closer, you know, your margin for error would shrink or something. You could argue 7 yards closer, and that kick is
it's good,
probably good,
just inside the right
and
upright.
And you're 2-1.
Yeah, and if you're 2-1, you believe now moving forward that the NFC South, which is a train wreck, could be yours. I know the Saints are 2-1. That Seattle team, good Lord, on Sunday, what are they doing? Anyhow, the Saints are going to have problems. The loss of Drew Brees is going to hurt them, so they're going to be gettable at this point. And obviously, Matt Ryan's a mess right now. The Falcons' offense is a mess right now. Yeah. And so they're not suddenly going to get it together. I mean, we're going on a couple of years now. It's not suddenly going to get fixed. Basically, when they lost Shanahan, they were screwed. So there's that. And Dirk Cutter's calling plays for him, so forget about it. There's that. Carolina, well, we'll see. I mean, maybe they found a quarterback. Bad news long term that Cam can't be the guy that he used to be before all these injuries. It doesn't look like. But short-term, they get an injured quarterback off the field, so they maybe improve. They certainly looked better.
And allow me to posit that if you have Samuel and DJ Moore with a healthy Greg Olsen and McCaffrey, I mean, that is quite a bit of weaponry to be working with.
Yeah, you got some guys to distribute the ball to, right. Yeah. But the point is, everybody's flawed in this division. Everybody's got issues in this division. It's a division to be had. If you're 2-1 right now, you're tied with the Saints first place. If you're 2-1 right now, you begin to believe that it's possible. Instead, you're 1-2. You just lost to the Giants. And let me tell you something. That Giants team's going nowhere. Saquon Barkley's hurt. You watch. Teams will now scheme for Daniel Jones. They'll get tape on him. Unfortunately, it's our tape. They'll adjust accordingly. They'll take the things he likes away from him. He'll see exotics. He'll see things he didn't see this past Sunday. I don't know what Todd Bowles was doing. But he won't see things as crystal clear as he did this past Sunday. And that team is terrible on defense. They're going to lose a lot of games. And we're going to be madder every week that goes by. When they go out and get their head kicked in every week, we're going to go, really? Really? We made Daniel Jones, Joe Montana.
Unless he ascends to heaven after every game. He leaves the field after his post-game interview, victorious once again.
Whoa.
There goes Daniel. He's floating over the 50. It's the reverse of the parachuting paratrooper. There he goes. He's into the sky.
Let's do this. I actually, and I thought about this. Partly because we've been burned so many times. I don't know. I'm not ready to give up on Matt Gay. I was ready to slice his jugular on Sunday, but I am I'm not ready to give up on him currently. He does. I mean, he's weird, right? Now, the blocked extra point, I'm not going to count against him. It was a blocked field goal or extra point.
Extra point.
Yeah.
So it was extra point miss and then a block.
Yeah.
That's how it started. 12-0.
So the
12-3.
Yeah,
whatever it was.
Yeah, 12-3. So, and by the way, every Bucks fan in America went, well, that's going to come back to haunt us because it does. And then there were sitting the 32-30. You're like, really?
Yes, real quick, a stat for you. If you think that we have the worst field goal kicking in the last 5 years, you're correct.
Yeah.
We have 38 missed field goals since 2015 in Tampa Bay. The next closest team, the Chargers, who have a very publicized kicking issue.
Yeah, them and the Bears.
29. That's the next closest team. We have 27 extra points floating out there somewhere.
The problem I have with Matt Gay, obviously missing that kick is a tough one. I'm going to need you to make
it. Took forever to snap that ball, too. It was like they just wanted us to bathe in salt with open wounds.
I think so. Paper cuts, Tom. Paper cuts. But here's the thing. After those misses, he comes back and rattles off four, whatever it was, three.
Yeah.
And they all
including an absolute bomb before the half.
Thundered. I mean, no problem. The sound you hear echoing through your living room, or if you were in the stands, is that foot connecting the ball, and no doubt that's down the pike. So I'm like, okay.
They're over ducking at McDill, firing, the sirens going.
I'm looking at that guy going, you got a little something to you. Most of our kickers would have been rattled there, but you rolled out there and thundered some. And I thought, okay, we're good. But what makes me nervous is that these kinds of misses have forever thwarted careers, obviously. And secondly, I would say this. It's like it never had a chance. That attempt is the sorriest attempt I've seen at a game-winning field goal in a long, long time.
Okay, I was going to say.
A long time.
You were here for North Carolina, Florida State in 2010.
Yeah. But this kick, by the way, this kick, if you guys are out there and you play golf, you know what it's like. You're having a good day, whatever. And for whatever reason, you fat one, it's a tear. You look up, you rise up, whatever it is. You really don't make flush contact with the ball at all. You scorch the earth on a drive, and you're looking at your driver head to see if it's still on because somehow you did the unthinkable on a teed-up ball. You hit the dirt beforehand. We've all done it. That was his kick. Like, the sound of that ball coming off his foot was the most pathetic, meager sort of... He hit the dirt.
Yeah, to continue the golf analogy, I think he played a bunker shot.
He's
trying to hit behind the ball.
It was the weirdest thing. That's a professional kicker. He kicked the dirt.
Yeah.
This isn't a club in your hand where you could miscalculate because it's not attached to your body. It's your foot. He kicked the dirt. What are you doing?
I've gathered confirmation. Yes, your foot is attached to your body.
He kicked the dirt.
Maybe he was blinded by the highlighter cleats. I don't know.
He choked. There's no around it. He choked. It's just, and I know. That's what I fear moving forward. I just think that...
Well, you got to play end-of-game scenarios differently, don't you? It's got
to
be in the back of your mind.
First of all, you have to understand the end-of-game scenarios, right. Bruce Arians. You have to have a clue what the hell you're doing at the end of a game to play him differently. What is he doing other than lying to us afterwards?
Yeah, to speak of that field goal drive where the kick was good earlier to put us up six, I fully agreed with all of the runs in a row. And
we disagree on that.
Here's why. It's not just about the pick. There's a third and short throw to Perryman that should have been a pick earlier in the half when momentum was going against
him. The linebacker that hops it and it comes off his hands?
Well, that's to start the half. So he made three throws that you go, whoa. The first two are warnings, and then the third one is strike three, essentially, when it's over Evan's head to me. That's where I go, okay, listen, if we get the ball back, which thankfully our defense cleaned up the mistake, you get a strip sack from God himself off of the edge now these
days. Well, what I'm going to tell you then is we need to move on from Jameis Winston. Because if you don't believe that you can call another pass for your quarterback after you've shoved it right down their throat on six consecutive runs and play action, knowing that they're going to dive to stop it, then you're never going to trust him.
Here's where we do agree, though. Third and two, that call is asinine.
It's terrible.
There's no way.
Out of a shotgun.
So Ronald Jones has to come out of the game for a breath because he's out of gas. You could call a timeout there if you'd like. We had to waste timeouts earlier in the half because we're idiots. 2-on-1 was on a substitution thing on defense.
I'm certainly not calling a timeout there. I'm either going to line up and run it down their throat out of the eye
if you want the
from
hot,
under center.
Right. If you want the hot hand Ronald Jones back in the game, that would be my point, if that's what you want. But you go out of the gun with Peyton Barber. So if you're going to go out of the gun with any back, it wouldn't be Peyton Barber. You got three of them. He would be the last choice. Then you're going to run a quarterback read option play?
It's just ridiculous. It makes no sense. It's a terrible call. And I don't sit here and bitch about play calling. We don't do that on this show all
that
often.
No, but when they line up in that formation, don't tell me pre-snap that you weren't thinking, this is stupid, this is stupid, what are we doing?
When they were lining up, I went, what are we doing here? Is it going to send him in motion? Are we going to go empty backfield?
Personally,
I thought they were going to go empty.
Personally, I would have called another run, played smash mouth. That's my thought on it.
Well, I think you have one of two options in that situation. If you're scared to death of your quarterback and you want to run the ball again, fine. You run it right up the gut again, but you're under center, first of all, and then you do it knowing you're going to go for it on fourth and inches.
Sure, sure.
And I'm fine. You got a 6'4", 240-pound quarterback. Snip
yes.
that bitch for a half a yard. What are we?
No, I agree. I'm not saying that my indication. Okay. I wouldn't be saying let's move on from Jameis Winston. I'm saying within the course of that game, the way the second half went, all right, you know what? Let's see if the running game works. Oh, we got a first down pretty easily. Let's keep running the football. Let's keep running the football. I got no problem with that.
Yeah, there's nuance to this. I agree in establishing the run game, and getting that going takes pressure off your quarterback so he doesn't have to win the game by throwing it 50 times. We're in agreement there. But I think that Jameis was having a good game, and I'm not going to cite a couple of we've gotten so prickly with him because of previous games and turnovers that the second he makes a throw that we think is a little shaky, it's like, well, that's it, shut it down, we can't throw it. And I look around the league. They all make these mistakes.
In that sense, you've got three examples in one half as things are stacking up against you. And listen, I get it.
Throw the ball down the field.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah. But the run worked to start the drive. It's just the third and two is ridiculous.
Well, I'm rolling him out, first of all.
And then personally, and if it's a play action rollout, you know it's probably going to be open. I got no problem with that call too. Agreed.
I agree. We pseudo agree. Okay, you're a little nervous. Maybe he's showing some signs of not seeing some things. So you just call the safest thing imaginable in the passing game, which, oh, by the way, you roll Jameis out, he's lethal.
Well, and on that third and five, Evans is wide the bleep open.
Wide open.
I mean, if you hit him and, you know, he's running up the sideline for 10, 15 yards, you're rolling, and then you probably end the game. But it's okay. The defense, like, you could erase that mistake in the flow of the game because the defense did, in fact, erase the mistake. The thing I would have done after the shot play down the field is successful to Evans. I don't know that I would have taken a shot to the end zone. I do believe field goal is the correct thing to do in that situation because he had earned your trust back.
By making the others,
he missed, like, for by your account, mm-hmm. right? And I agree with you here. He missed one PAT. Mm-hmm. The next one is blocked not, on him. Not on him. He ends up making bombs, and then he makes the other big one to put you up six. I don't agree with the call in that situation, but he made it. So therefore, he's proven to you that he has earned the right.
I certainly don't move him back further.
I agree.
The hell that
what
was.
I would have called with 10 or 13, whatever the hell it was. 13. You have one timeout. They don't have any timeouts. I call a run, and I center it off of the running play. And maybe I get it down inside the 5 yard, wherever it is. I don't go backwards. And I certainly don't take a stupid delay a game after spiking the football. Like, sometimes in the flow of the game, you hit a shot play down the field, you either have to call a timeout or you take a delay a game because nobody set at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, no, I get
it. But we already got down there and spiked the damn ball.
Well, not just that, by the way, because they played it perfectly. Jameis played it perfectly. All of the veterans understood to get to the line. They did it just fine. Here's the thing, man. You do not, and we'll put a ribbon on this, and we'll bring Lita Kemper in next. You do not ice your own kicker. He iced his own kicker. And then lied afterwards.
It's like being a manager in a business, and you're turning over a lot of what you used to do because you're expanding or you've climbed up the ladder, whatever it is, but you can finally take some stuff.
You trust somebody.
And you put it on somebody else's desk, and you say, thank God. Dirk Cutter, I had to get rid of that guy. Thank God he's gone. Oh, I found this perfect candidate. Use your recruiting service. Maybe you want to sponsor one with Scuttlebucks if you're one of those people. That's fine. You're a headhunter.
Yeah, go do it.
And you're like, thank God. And they've proven to you, you know, all the lead-up stuff, and now it's all theirs. And then they F it up in the one way they can't possibly F it. That's what Bucks fans have to be now in the last 2 minutes of a game. We can't be satisfied with whatever situation we're in because we know that this dude has it in him to screw it up for no reason out of nowhere. The Carolina situation.
That was bizarre.
That can't happen 1 out of 1,000 times. This one, that can't happen 1 out of 1,000 times. Oh, by the way, they're consecutive weeks. So you can't take a breather as a Bucks fan.
Not only that, I now look at that coach who I trusted implicitly based on his reputation and his previous successes and all of the reasons that we exalted the hire. And now I got a jaundiced eye. I got two fingers to my eyes, two fingers back to you. And guess what it's about? the same, are we allowed to curse on this podcast? The same BS that Cotter pissed me off about, that cowardly nonsense. That second half was played not to lose. Played not to lose. Get the hell out of here with that. And what are we doing? Go blow the Giants out.
One final note, and it should be noted. That third and two call is not Byron Leftwich's call. Bruce Arians butted in and decided to call that play in that moment.
Don't do that again, Bruce. You don't know what the hell you're doing, clearly.
He's done a wonderful job in rebuilding people's comp, or he did. We've got to watch freaking carefully now if our confidence is shot as a team, because all we've known is crap like this. And this guy got you to believe the defense is 3-for-3 in stopping the best player on the team.
Yeah.
Because not only did we stop Saquon, we knocked his ass out the game. And that wasn't the first big hit he took. Hit him in the damn mouth.
Yeah. No, there were lots of hits, so I was like, look at us.
There is drastic improvement with this team, but this result had to come. It had to come with it. It had to validate
everything we're doing. Last week's show, you said it on my show. This is just about handling business, showing you can be trusted, going out and taking care of business against a team that's ill-equipped to come on the road and beat you, starting a rookie quarterback and a sieve for a defense. You go out, you win this game, you cover the spread, you roll on Big River, you take your L against the Rams, hopefully you play well, you learn something about yourself, you're 2-2 moving forward. Instead, you lose this game, now you're reeling, we've got a lack of trust in the coaching staff again, and I don't know where Jameis's head's at. I mean, he's not a dumbass. He's certainly going to know they called that game away from him in the second half. You got all kinds of issues now that you welcomed back in, that you had worked so hard to erase. It's inexplicable. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com will join us next.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Yeah, the music tells you it's time to bring him in. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. I imagine it's been a busy week on the JoeBucksFan.com message boards. I don't know that I want to dip my toes into those waters, but I'm glad people have an outlet in JoeBucksFan.com. Lee joins us now. Hello, sir.
Yeah, how you doing? That's a good one-liner.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Lee, Tom and I talked about it just before you came on in the first segment of the Scuttlebucks. I can't put my finger on it. It might very well be. Tom's probably right. It has to do with expectations. The only time disappointment truly occurs is when you have expectations and those expectations aren't met. So the expectation here was that you beat a rookie at home, a bad Giants team, one of the worst defenses in the league. You get out 28-10. You get up 28-10. That game's over. For all intents and purposes, that game is over unless you allow the Giants to do what they did to start the third quarter, and then they begin to believe. But I think you add up the number of times now that Bruce Arians has just made cataclysmic mistakes. And, you know, I understood the previous regime to be cowardly, and I described him as such on a regular basis. He wasn't trustworthy. He lost the locker room. And so when you saw perplexing things, decisions, whatever it may have been on Sundays last year, the year before, you just said, oh, that's Dirk Cutter. You know, that's who he is. He's lost the locker room. He's not long for this world. But Bruce Arians comes in. This is a 2-time coach of the year who's earned the trust of quarterbacks throughout his career and has been a coach that you could rely on to win close games, see his record in one score games. And yet he's coaching like a game, like a guy who's seen the game pass him by, like a guy who's afraid to lose and take chances, and certainly like a guy who doesn't trust his quarterback. But this thing at the end of the game was absurd. His excuse afterwards was even dumber. And, you know, I think people are just bitterly disappointed right now. How's it played down in Tampa this week?
Oh, you pretty much summed up all the emotions of Bucs fans. There were higher expectations. Especially with Arians, you know, this is the guy, and I'm gonna unload my best one-liner in a couple of seconds here. I usually try to have a one-liner for you. This I'm gonna let loose right away. everybody had expectations for Arians. Here was a guy that built his legacy. No risk it, no biscuit. And as a commenter on JoeBucksFan.com said, or wrote earlier this week, the final couple minutes of that game, the era of Limp Bizkit was introduced to the Bucks.
Yeah, well, that.
So I told the guy I was going to steal that. I can't take credit for it, but I could certainly steal it. Well, and that pretty much sums it up. I mean, I'm watching the last couple of minutes, and like, I thought Lovie Smith was back on the sideline. Here was a guy, a kicker who was already skittish, already missed two kicks. And you're going to, you know, first off, that's a Tony Dungy deal when you actually on purpose lost 7 yards to try to set up a field goal. Last time I saw that was a Dungy move, and Dungy got beat. If you remember, the Bucs are playing for a playoff spot in Green Bay late in the season, and the Bucs took a kneel down on purpose instead of Gramatica, who just barely missed the right upright. Mm-hmm. And the Bucs, instead of winning the division and getting a bye, they had to go to Philadelphia, and they got their clock cleaned. That's exactly what, I mean, while that was going on, that was going through my mind, like, oh, no, here we go. Dungy did the same thing and got burned. But one of my issues was, I asked Arians about this after the game. You had 13 seconds left. The clock was stopped. Jameis spiked the ball. I don't know if they showed it on TV. Jameis had this awesome, you know, fist punch. He thought the game was won. And when he did it, I'm like, uh-oh, premature jocularity. And I asked Arians, you had 13 seconds left. You possibly had a chance for two kill shots in the end zone. Did you think about that? He said no. So Arians was his mindset. If you believe him, and I tend to believe a guy right after a game when the emotions are raw. I tend to believe what's coming out of his mouth as opposed to having a few hours to craft a different answer. When he said no, so I'm like thinking about this. Like, wait a minute. The entire, you know, Jameis was carving up the Giants on that last drive. And all you were thinking about was setting up for a field goal for a guy who already had a rotten day. Good grief.
Yeah, but here's the thing. But, Lee, he certainly was thinking about setting up a field goal, because you don't even have to have the evidence there of what he said. Go back to the red zone prior. They run the ball 7 straight times.
Yeah.
I got no problems with 6 of those runs. No problems with 6 of those runs. The 3rd-and-2 run out of the shotgun is dumb, first of all. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
Secondly, when are you going to mix in a play action after you've bludgeoned them with the run up the gut and tell Jameis, if you're so scared of the quarterback, which, by the way, is not a good message to send to your quarterback, who's having mm-hmm. a day in which he throws for 380 yards and 3 touchdowns, here's what I'd tell you. Run play action and roll them out. Jameis, everybody knows this about Jameis. There's a plenty to criticize about Jameis, but there's plenty to like, too. And one of the things that you love is him throwing outside the pocket, rolling to his right,
yes.
where he's the best quarterback, literally, statistically speaking, in the league. So why would
I'll add to that. Him rolling to his left, which is not advisable, he's lethal.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen a quarterback in years as dynamite as Jameis is rolling to his left.
Well, either side, when he's out of the pocket, his statistics, it's not an opinion, are the best in the league. At one point, 2 years ago, he was just behind Aaron Rodgers, then he surpassed him. Now, I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers. What I am saying, in those situations, you've got an ideal setup, and you can tell him if you're scared to death of a turnover in the red zone. You can say, hey, listen, we got points here. We got points here, Jameis. I'm going to roll you out. You got a run-pass option. If it's there, take it. If you can run it and get the first, do that. But by whatever you do, don't force the ball here. Throw it into the damn parking lot if you have to, once you're outside the parking lot, once you're outside the pocket. He had so many options, and he runs this slow-developing RP. It's just stupid. And so you already saw the mistrust there.
I'm like you. I couldn't believe it. And by the way, I'm going to throw some numbers at you. After Jameis threw his interception, you know, right away, it's clear that he took the ball out of Jameis' hands after that. Or if you want to blame Leftwich, go ahead and blame Leftwich. But eventually, eventually the buck stops Arians' feet. After that interception, until the last drive when they had no choice but to throw it, after that interception, Jameis threw one pass. One pass. And here's some other passing stats for you that will also boggle your mind. The Giants have the worst pass defense in the NFL. The worst. The Bucs had 32 plays on first down on Sunday. 7 were passes. Excuse me, 11. 11 were passes. Of that 32, 11 were passes. two of those went for touchdowns. So you're playing the worst pass defense in the NFL for first downs, and you're running the ball. Now, I got to be fair. I don't know what they saw the Giants were showing. Maybe they were showing that they were expecting to pass and they decided to run. That's a different animal. But you would think facing the worst first down pass defense in the NFL, you would try to throw the ball more than a third of the time, especially when two of those 11 attempts went for touchdowns.
You know, listen, one of the things we have enjoyed, to be fair, about the play calling up to this point is their willingness to stick with the run. So I'm not going to go crazy on some of that, if only because
we're throwing the towel. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were having success running the football, actually, with both backs. So one thing to note there is I'm glad that they're establishing a run and taking pressure off of Jameis. It appears to be working. He's actually played well the last two games. And so I am frustrated. You know, if you're going to tell people before the season that, you know, one of the attractive elements of this job is that you like the quarterback and you feel like you got something to work with there, and you know, you're going to get him to curb his interceptions and everything else you like about his ability to read a defense, pre-snap, all that other stuff, then you can't play scared of the quarterback, especially not against a defense as porous as the Giants. And they did. Like you said, they did. They clearly got nervous after that interception. But one thing I know from watching the league, everybody throws interceptions. There are very few people out there that don't throw interceptions because it's a league now of passing. So you're going to put the ball in the air more, and you're subject to interceptions. I'll grant you Jameis has thrown more than his fair share. We'd like to see that cut down. But in that game, he didn't have a propensity to throw interceptions. That's a play where he got flushed out of the pocket. He threw behind Evans. Bad throw happens. But he was having a fine day, an exceptional day. Yeah. And so, you know, again, this is one of those things. It's another reason why we hate quarterback win stats, because the long pass to Evans sets up the game winner. That's not Jameis's fault. They would have got a win there, except for you have an impotent kicker who's scared to death and goes out there and somehow drop kicks it off to the right from 34 yards. A coach who mishandles the time and the distance at the end of the game. And the reason this stings now, they're screwed. They'll go lose to the Rams and they're 1-3. And we all knew that if you could get to, at this point, 2-2 through 4, you had a legitimate shot to be a fringe wild card contender. And the division sucks. You have a lot of injuries and a lot of people losing games, so they're not completely out of it. But this feels like a loss and a half. This feels like two losses. It feels like it was completely preventable. And we haven't even started on Todd Bowles, who I love, and the defense looking like ass against this kid making his start, his first start.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Now, Andy Benoit of the MMQB, he had a video breakdown of Bowles versus Daniel Jones on the Evan Engram 75-yard pitch and catch to open the second half. Basically, Daniel Jones read the blitz perfectly. He read what Bowles was going to do, and we all know Bowles, i.e. Arians, loves the blitz. And, you know, sooner or later, you're going to get burned when you blitz a lot. Sooner or later. Sooner came on that first play of the second half. And, you could argue that was the game right there. What you're saying is exactly right. This feels like two or three losses. This feels like the Bucs have dug their grave for the 2019 season. Now, statistically, no way in heck you could say that. But it sure feels that way because, oh boy, look what's coming. The Rams, that five-game road streak, or road trip, two visits to the West Coast, a visit to London, which the Bucs are terrible at in London. It just feels like the noose has been tied around the neck. Maybe that's a bad analogy. But it just feels awful. This year feels like it's borderline doomed thanks to that loss. Everybody, I think you, I think Tom, I think every Bucs fan, when you look at the schedule, when it comes out, what teams can you beat? What teams are you probably going to get beat by? I don't think anybody thought that the Giants would be an L. I don't think so.
Tell me really quickly about Jason Pierre-Paul's contract and what this does for the Bucs with the salary cap, obviously.
There is a rancor at JoeBucsFan.com headquarters. Steve and I are throwing empty beer balls with each other. To me, that signals the Bucs don't believe JPP can come back. Steve believes otherwise. And my argument was, well, if you believe he can come back, why are you turning him loose next year, in March? Which is what, he's a free agent in March now with his new contract. And Steve said it had to do with the salary cap, and he went to a big rigmarole. I'll just stick with what I thought of the first time. It signals that the Bucs don't believe JPP can return to form.
and it saves him $4.5 million, which would have been nice to have if you could have gone out and got one of the many free agents that the Dolphins were just giving away.
Even for that matter, you can go out and make a trade for Clowney make a trade for D4. Think about this, and one of the many Buck fans I've spoken with after this awful loss, the guy, to my face, he said, "Are you trying to tell me the Bucs could have D Ford for Sean Murphy Bunting?"
I know, man. It's this is a rough one, Lee. I'm just laughing in general.
You have about to laugh the way you go crazy
about the way
man.
We're run and what's going on, and you get this deal done now, and you had an opportunity at Clowney, Minkah Fitzpatrick, a left tackle. You could have done any number of things. I mean, you could
a lot of things. Yep.
Yeah. Good talking to you, Lee.
But no, the Bucs have talent.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you.
Hey, have a good one, Jeff. Thanks again.
You too. Always a pleasure. JoeBucksFan.com, the website, Lita Kemper. It's a pitch fest, but this was going to be. I mean, this was always going to be. And I don't know. I mean, I suppose if you're able to shock everybody and go on the road and pick yourself up off the mat after this devastating set of circumstances and beat the Rams, and that's a giant if, obviously. Maybe you'll reinfuse the life that was lost on that Sunday against a rookie quarterback. But I'm not surprised. Tom and I talked after the game, talked all week long about how frustrating this loss was. I'm not surprised to hear that it's equally as frustrating to Bucs fans down there and obviously those on JoeBucksFan.com.
Like I said, I'm just hoping that when they rolled the stone away on the third day, that was an imposter. And we saw Jesus for the first time since then, on Sunday. Because if that dude's really, really good, then in retrospect, we'll have hope because he looked like he'd been in the league for 10 years. And Lee's right when he points out, you know, he diagnoses the blitz. He took a lot of hits, didn't get scared,
never.
Didn't affect him one iota.
Always looked downfield.
And truthfully, the pressure we got typically was when we rushed three or four. Barrett's, you know, strip sack, the sacks, all that seemed to be pretty straight-up rushes, not exotics. We were talking about last week, and it's something that was dead wrong in retrospect, is, you know, he's not seeing these blitzes that Todd Bowles is going to roll out. It was like he knew our plays before they were run.
Best game he's ever played, and that includes every year and every game he was in college.
What a time. What a time for it.
And he may be great. I saw one analyst say this week that, in scouting his tape from college, he didn't see any player that looked like this, that nobody looked like that, and especially not Daniel Jones. We saw him at Duke. He was garbage. Now, Duke sucks, so, you're overwhelmed every week, but the Giants suck too, and they should have been overwhelmed. It's not like they have a ton of weapons, and he was never nervous, appeared to have greater arm strength than he did in college, made every throw, continued to keep his eyes downfield no matter how hard he got hit, and he got hammered several times. Didn't
face like a boxer's hands coming down. His never did.
Never did. Never did. It was unbelievable. Jesus. And he became more and more emboldened as the game went on. He'd get hit. He'd get back. That hit Nassib hit him with, that's enough to knock most guys out of the game. And then he got his face stepped on as he was being, dragged along the ground. I'm like, that didn't shake you up? That good Lord. I mean, some of the toughest guys we've ever seen play the position would have been shook by that, at least for a series. Not him.
Not him. But not him. Not on this day. First time in 55 years they pulled off the feet. There you go.
It's crazy. Listen up, Bucks fans. Bill Curry Ford is having a huge buyback sale starting Thursday and running through Monday, September the 30th. Bill Curry Ford will buy cars up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book. That's good stuff there. That's right. Get up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade through the end of September. Bill Curry Ford is 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Tampa's first family of Ford for nearly 60 years is Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com. More of the Scuttlebuttocks in a moment.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
All right, in short, Short segment here. We went plenty long, venting the last two segments. We all needed it, I think. If it's redundant to you, my apologies.
Ugh. May I offer one suggestion to the general manager, if I may be so bold?
Mm.
We don't ever block on punt returns. Like, it's almost like a...
Bobo's going to get decapitated.
Could you at least put out a feeler to Greg Reed's agency? The dude up in Canada, he played here at Florida State, so we watched his career very closely.
Punt returners in the history of college football.
His leg looks pretty good in terms of, like, he had knee issues when he left Florida State. He got hurt at the second-rate university he went to, and he got a second-rate surgery that set him back. But he looks healthy now, and if we're not going to block it and protect it, our
punt
returner...
He can make you miss in a phone booth, so do it.
He will still do that.
Yeah.
And Bobo is worth nothing unless you get some blocking. So,
also,
I don't know.
Are you like me? Every time you watch this now, you know how close he is to fumbling the ball? Every time I watch it, I'm like, you're about to fumble, aren't you? I can see it. I can tell. I have a knack for these things. You can tell.
I mean, just look at the film. Give it a call. I mean, you get him for like $20,000. I know that's not legal, but I'm sure you could do it.
You can get him for cheap. He would do it on the cheap, and he's really good at it. Anyhow, that said, our thanks to Lita Kemper joining us last segment. I'm bitterly disappointed, if it's not obvious already, and I give us little to no shot to go win this game on the road. Because I don't think we can block them. And they are a night and day team at home and on the road. They really are. When you look at the Rams the last 3 years, 2 years in particular, they are a night and day team. They are exceptional at home for whatever reason, and they are middling on the road. They're still good, but they're not great. This game on the road, coming off this bitter disappointment, this is a test of professionalism. It is a test of Arians and his coaching staff. I would be pleasantly surprised if the Bucs go on the road and play well and are in the game in the second half. I want to win every game, but I'm also a realist. We're not where the Rams are currently. You go and lose this game, okay, not good to be 1-3. It's problematic. I can live with it, but can you show me that you're buttoned up and that you're a professional football team that can take the kind of bitter disappointment we just got done discussing for the last 40 minutes and compartmentalize it, move on.
It's just absurd that the coaching staff has done the hard part in putting us in position to play above our heads, probably by any reasonable measure. And they're the ones that after doing all the hard work, all the heavy labor, that screw it up in the simplest of circumstances. I get that the kicker missed the kick, and the kicker's got to make a 34-yarder. I'm not escaping that, or it's not escaping me. But Jesus, you've done so much work to get these players' spirits up. You have the defense playing with physicality. Yeah, they blow some coverages in the back end, and this might be a bad weekend for them in that regard. But you've got them at least playing to a purpose, and they've got an identity of some sort. You got a pass rush, which we haven't had in Tampa for a long time. And you screw up clock management. I mean, you've done the hard part. You've gotten us to the brink of winning two football games, and you tried to lose both.
But we also, I think, fairly called into question decision-making. Not just clock management, but decision-making at the end of the game. I mean, there's just things they did that were just – they're curious. They're eyebrow-raising. They're disconcerting. There's something to keep an eye on there. Arians butting in to call that play at the end on third down.
That's unbelievable.
That's a –
you know, if we win the game, I think that's one of the big headlines of the week. If we come back and win it and he says that he called a 3rd-and-2, I believe that would be one of our big topics on the Scuttlebuck. Yeah. Unfortunately, we have a bigger topic, which is we lost the freaking game.
We lost it in glorious fashion and been the butt of a joke all week long. They can't stop talking about Daniel Jones. And why shouldn't they? They've got a million highlights to showcase. One more time, folks, Bill Curry Ford is having a huge buyback sale starting Thursday and running through Monday, September the 30th. Can you believe September is almost gone? Bill Curry Ford will buy cars up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book value. That's right. Get up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade through the end of September. Bill Curry Ford is 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. You guys know that. Tampa's first family of Ford for nearly 60 years is Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com. All right, well, we're going to end it there. We'll see. I figure the Bucs are going to go lose this game now. Don't think it'll be all that close. Cross my fingers that I'm wrong. Maybe they infuse life by shocking us all and pulling off the upset of the weekend. But I'm not going to hold my breath. And right now, I don't want to talk about them anymore. For Tom Wang, I'm Jeff Cameron.
do they cover the numbers 10?
Yeah, they'll cover.
Well, that would be probably good news then. We'd be slightly optimistic next week at 1-3.
It's not on my card. Not going to touch it.
Well, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, it's not going to touch
it. Because it's combustible.
If you made me touch it, I'd take the 10. It's a weird phrasing. I know. Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks, everybody. Man on the street,